This is KJZZ, your member-supported news and information station. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. For the week of July 23rd, here are a few top stories. A deadline this week for reunifying migrants' families has created some serious challenges. Here's our story from the Fronteras desk.
President Donald Trump's administration has until tomorrow to finish reuniting migrant families, where it could face penalties from a federal judge in California. From KJZZ's Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Matthew Casey reports newly reunified parents and children are being taken to a cluster of buildings on the city's main drag.
The light rail goes past the Phoenix Financial Center here at the corner of Central Avenue and Osborne. Lutheran Social Services of the Southwest has one of the buildings set up to help hundreds of migrant families get reacquainted.
Ayer me entregaron mi niño.
Noel Cucul Pop got his 8-year-old son back on Monday. He says they fled Guatemala after getting beaten by a group of men sent by the owner of where they lived.
Me dijeron que si doy parto a la policía, dos me matarán.
Cucul Pop says the men threatened to kill him if he told the police, so he took his boy north. Federal authorities caught them after they illegally crossed the border near Yuma. Cucul Pop jumped the 14-foot-high fence and broke his left arm. The father and son missed each other's birthdays while separated for more than 2 months. On Tuesday, they sat together in an office while the boy colored a picture of a turtle.
Pues yo sentí muy alegre y gozoso por al ver mi niño de nuevo.
Cucul Pop says he was happy to see his son again. He can't fully express himself in Spanish because his first language is an indigenous dialect. So is the boy's. But he did say what he was coloring. The separation of migrant families has dominated headlines all summer. And Thursday is the court-ordered deadline for the Trump administration to finish reuniting them. Attorney General Jeff Sessions planted the seed for family separations in April when he announced a zero-tolerance policy for illegal border crossers. He defended it during a trip to Scottsdale in May.
If you don't want your child to be separated, then don't bring them across the border illegally. It's not our fault that somebody does that.
In June, President Donald Trump reversed course and stopped family separations with an executive order.
So we're going to have strong, very strong borders, but we're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated.
Less than a week later, a federal judge in San Diego gave the government 30 days to reunite migrant families.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Julissa. Trabajo para Lutheran Social Services.
Staff with Lutheran Social Services welcomes newly reunited migrant families to the office at the Phoenix Financial Center. They give the families food, let them call relatives, and teach those with ankle monitors how to charge them.
We're letting them decompress. We're letting them bond with their children.
Regional Director Karen Barrientos says the families she's seen are traumatized.
When we're walking them to the restrooms to say, go clean up, wash and everything else, that child is clinging to that parent because they think that we're going to remove them as soon as that parent walks away.
Before they were separated in detention, Cucul Pop says he told his son he'd done nothing wrong, and he asked the boy to forgive him for bringing them to the U.S.
Mi niño dije que niño... Discúlpame porque te trajo aquí.
Cucul Pop hopes to eventually win asylum. In the meantime, he and his son are taking their first ever plane ride to Kentucky. They're going to live with Cucul Pop's brother, who he hasn't seen in about 15 years. Matthew Casey, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In a combination of news and our lives in the desert, here is the first story in our series on the monsoon. The show's Lauren Gilger has more. Monsoon season here in Arizona is both violent and beautiful. Powerful winds and rain can flood streets and destroy homes. But the storms also bring at least temporary relief from the oppressive desert heat and much-needed water to our perpetually dry city. My favorite part of the monsoon storms are the hours right afterward when the rain stops and the city smells like creosote and wet asphalt. It's like the whole city can take a deep breath now that the heat has broken and the storm has passed. Every year, the monsoon season stirs up the desert, and this year we're starting a series about the monsoon to talk about how it stirs us all up, too.
The colors are absolutely amazing and breathtaking.
Today, we're speaking with a couple of people who take the monsoon and make something out of it, starting with artist Laura Thurbon.
So I have a lot of gray tones and a lot of blue tones.
She's standing in front of a few of her paintings that are on display at Gallery Andrea in Scottsdale. They're not literal depictions of the desert's monsoon storms. Instead, you see layer upon layer of colors, yellows and blues and greens, that all look like they are in fluid motion.
And kind of the shine of the sun coming through all these dark colors. So you can actually see the sun coming through, and it is, you know, lighting up. It's that moment that is absolutely so gorgeous in Arizona.
She layers light and dark oil paints to look like sunlight filtering through the monsoon clouds, the behemoths that captured her imagination when she first came to the valley.
I'm from Peru. I'm from Lima. And of course, when I came here to Arizona, it was 17 years ago, I have never, ever seen a monsoon. The first time that I saw it, to me, was so powerful and so incredibly beautiful, and at the same time, so scary. Because I've never heard thunder. I mean, I've never, you know, seen all this lightning. And to me, it was kind of a panic the first time that I have to live it, because I didn't know. And of course, the rain was pouring so hard. And I was like, where did this come from? Open your eyes, look at the sky, look at the beautiful weather. I mean, it just comes with so many different colors and different shades and different lightning and different kind of type of lights that we don't see in an everyday Arizona day. So really look at the window. There is like all these amazing colors that and light that you won't see in a normal day.
Laura Thurbon's monsoon paintings are on display along with other monsoon art at Gallery Andrea in Scottsdale. Our next monsoon maker captures the storm right when it happens.
People like to call me a storm chaser, but I don't think I really chase them. I just kind of wait for them. I'm not really a storm chaser, just a storm waiter.
For local photographer Danny Upshaw, the first time he took a photo of a monsoon storm sparked his interest in photography to begin with.
So at the time, I was just in school, and I was just kind of like an internship for a graphic design job, you know, nothing I was too passionate about, but they had cameras there at the office, and I was kind of tinkering with them at the time. And on that day, I was on my way to a friend's place, and he lives on the base of South Mountain, and all I remember is just driving up, maybe it was like 20th Ave or something like that, and then just remember seeing this like tiny cloud just peek over the South Mountain, like the peaks. And as they get closer, it just comes faster. And I thought I'd never seen anything like this before and just pulled over immediately to like take some photos with my phone.
That semi-blurry cell phone photo was the first of hundreds, probably thousands of monsoon storms that Upshaw would take. He remembers the moment clearly.
I remember it just being really still, just like how it is, like just even in the studio. And as soon as it hit, like a gust of wind and dust, and it was like raining in the storm. It was crazy. I never felt seen anything like that before.
He got back in the car and made his way to his friend's house about a quarter mile away.
And it was actually pretty scary because you couldn't see in front of you more than like 10 feet. There was a couple of cars that were pulled over, and I remember just going really slow to try to be really cautious. And when I got there, it probably would rain for like a good like 30 minutes, just nonstop.
The next day, he saw a time-lapse video of the storm online.
And I thought, what is time lapse? Like, I never heard of this. I had to just get into using cameras. And after that, I kind of start like researching on like what you need to do to capture an image like that and what time lapse meant. And at that time, I was just doing graphic design. And I think that kind of launched my career now, which now I do like video and motion graphics, because just tinkering with video and time lapse kind of just led me that direction.
Today, when he knows a storm is coming, he prepares.
Usually, the whole day, I just kind of get cameras ready and kind of pick out a couple of locations that I might think work. And I feel like you can plan as much as you can, but the planning, I mean, everything, you know, it never goes according to plan. I have a couple of friends who live downtown, and they're able to let me on the roof. Or there's a couple of parking garages that are accessible. There's been a few times where I've been on rooftops where security would come and ask me to leave. And I'm like, no, there's a storm coming right there. Like, I already set up. Can you just wait, like, 10 more minutes?
Did they let you wait?
No. No.
He says he's an advocate for Phoenix, downtown Phoenix in particular. And he wants to share that, to show people how Phoenix is more than just blue skies and cactus.
I mean, I think there's a lot of life here. It brings a lot of life. I mean, up until leading our first storm here, it was pretty blue skies, pretty warm, not much happening. But I think once you see a time lapse in its full form, like edited and everything, it kind of like you see how dynamic the weather is here. And that kind of opens people's eyes to like appreciate it so much more.
Upshaw is Navajo, and he says when he was a child and visited his grandmother on the Navajo Nation, the storms always represented something more.
I mean, I grew up with like a grandmother who would chase us outside and make us go in the rain. She would say, you're washing off the bad stuff with the good rain.
That was photographer Danny Upshaw. And as we continue our series on the monsoon, we want to hear what you think about it. How do you feel about this uniquely Arizona time of year? Send us a note, or even better, a voice memo telling us your monsoon story. You can send those to the show at kjzz.org or call and leave us a voicemail at 480-774-8299. You can get all the details of that on our website as well. You might end up on air as part of our series.
And from KJZZ Original Productions, here is one of our Tiny Desert Concerts.
What do you get when you take two hip-hop MCs, a Spanish guitar player, an R&B singer, and throw in some synth and keys and maybe a horn section? The Stakes. The local music collaboration features a unique collection of musicians and results in a unique sound and message. Formed 5 years ago, The Stakes take elements of jazz, R&B, hip-hop, and sometimes even classic rock in their music, and it all culminates in a dynamic live show that is both rehearsed and improvisational. They played a few songs for us recently at our Spot E studios, and I sat down with one of those MCs, Lord Cash, to talk more about their work. They are a live hip-hop band, and he started by telling me exactly what that means.
It's different because it's a living, breathing experience. Nothing's ever the same twice. You're getting different colors and, for lack of a better word, shapes of sounds all the time throughout the entire show. It's a more vibrant experience. I think it's more tangible for the crowd that way. Your live instruments are giving you real vibrations in real time, and I think the people respond to that in a different way than they do with just recorded music.
So you're also melding a lot of genres here, and you're a diverse group. Like, there are people from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of ages, it looks like, up there. I want to talk a little bit about how the band came together and who's in it and how that kind of shapes what comes out.
Well, I think that's our primary, like, identity in a way, that this group of people that are so different from so many different places came together, and you hear it in the music. I like to say it kind of started with our keyboardist Ben Scolaro and our former guitarist Caleb Veazey. They were putting something together, basically, putting their feelers out there, seeing if they could get some musicians together and try to build on something. And one person told another person who told another person. One of those people told me, and I went over, and we all got in the same room together, and the music started, and 5 minutes later, we knew we had something special. Everybody just brought something totally different into the mix, and it made a whole new food of music.
It's like a dish, yeah. So what genres are we hearing? Like, I hear jazz. There's definitely rock elements here, obviously hip-hop. What else is there?
You're right on track. Jazz, hip-hop, rhythm and blues, Latin. A lot of our musicians have a history of playing different types of music, so they bring in all their experiences. The areas that we're from are different, from the South, from the Midwest, from the West Coast. So all these things are always at play all the time in every song.
So you're going to play a song for us. What is it?
This one's called Blue Jean Grey from our new project, Prophecy.
I see you through different eyes. It's like you can read my mind. I see a goddess when I look in your eyes. All you see is a novice. You don't know your true power. Ever since the day we met in attendance at the school for the gifted, we've been on a mission. Your thoughts uplift me. I balance the force of nature inside your heart. A master of magnetism couldn't pull us apart. I want to see you rise like a phoenix and conquer all of your inner demons. That's what I believe in. Don't let the doubt creep in. You were born special. Always keep reaching till you're on that next level. It's a gift, not a curse. You were chosen, girl. Now take my hand, love, and let's go save the world.
She's off her head.
Plus you blessed for your weakness. That morality like a monk that thug life street with. You can't beat it, but you rather hide behind weakness. You want to fit in, and that's what keeps you defeated. Because a leader can only follow for so long until you're forced to choose wrong. Or you're an original. Why you entertaining these clones? Why you crawling with lanes when I just saw you passing jet planes? Got them angels jealous, envious of your wings. So don't ground yourself when the sky is your inheritance. You were born to impact this world, not dig entrenched in it. Eugene Gray amongst mortals, accepting that is your hurdle. Mine is fertile with brilliant ideas, so please birth them. And I see you hurt. So struggling to be free, so step from behind the mask and let these powers release.
Teardrops was comments that left the world bleeding. Consumed by the darkness when she stopped believing. During her greatest weakness, fell victim to her demons. Couldn't find none of the light she most needed. You can gain or lose it all in an instance. Love yourself, then comes forgiveness, then comes repentance.
I see the weight on the world and it's hanging like weighted obstacles. Looking through this old map and don't know which way to go, cause now your pain is visual. And you can't hide it like proactive for dirty follicles. And I know the pain is horrible, but strength is only built from tribulation. Tolerance from frustration, downfall before restoration. It's hard work and then we getting faded. But then this life will drive you a little crazy. See, your depression is depressing.
and you're the only cause of your stressing. Cause once you underestimate your powers, well then you underestimate your blessings. See your depression is depressing, and you're the only cause of your stressing. Cause once you underestimate your powers, well then you underestimate your blessings.
It sounds to me like you have a message. It's often positive, I think, and there's also like an element of storytelling. So tell us a little bit about Blue Jean Grey, about what story you're trying to tell through this character in this song.
Well, Blue Jean Grey is interesting to me because it involves different perspectives about one thing. So the person that originally composed this song about a young lady who was unsure of herself and going through trials and tribulations and struggles. And then I took that in a whole nother direction. And my verse has a whole subtext relative to me being a comic book nerd and channeling it into Jean Grey, the character. Jean Grey is a member of the superhero group, the X-Men. She has psychic powers and she struggled to control them. And I took pieces of that and reflected it into a real person, like struggling to recognize their full potential and struggling to see their value. And we all approached it from different angles and put them together. And that's how we got Jean Grey.
It's the perfect example of how that diversity of members in the group has created its own story. I want to talk a little bit about like the music scene in Phoenix. And you've said that you want to sort of help define that with this group because there isn't a huge music scene here and we've been growing it. And I think when people think of Phoenix, they probably don't first think of hip hop. So how is it that you're trying to shape the music scene here? What is it you want to add to it?
Well, we want to show the versatility that's here, first of all, because one thing the stakes always are raging against is being put in a box to be labeled as one thing and one thing only. And to be the vanguard of the movement of versatile musicians that are here, there are so many musicians that bring something different and new to the table that people haven't heard. And I think we just happen to be a really good example of that because of our versatility. I think the more people hear or look, the more they'll find.
All right, and you're going to take us out on a song. Which one?
This will be Unified off our new album, Prophecy.
Lord Cash with The Stakes. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Perfection. I'm Tesla with a pen, live wise connecting. Good music, good people, what the sound is reflecting. Progress keep on spreading every direction. Feeling like an injection, adrenaline rush. How the words so raw, but the sound so plush. Word is bond, death to the unjust. Lord Cash guarantee quality, you can't trust now. Get a drum or something, turn up the bass. Let the key set you free, put a smile on your face. Any naysayer getting ran out the state. Don't let that blasphemy get you burned at the stakes. The vision this mission take is ahead of its time. I'm like Quincy Jones' ears and Spike Lee's eyes, trying to find forever inside my mind. Bring it to reality one bar at a time. Time, 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 time. The stakes are super high. I'm talking you and I. Hip hop,
thank God that we unified.
Yeah, fist up.
Thank God that we unified.
They want us gone.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening. From the Science Desk, here's KJZZ's Nicholas Gerbis.
Scientists have long known that Mars has water in the form of ice and certain minerals. Now, new data might settle the 30-year debate over whether the red planet holds liquid water, too. Radar data by the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft has revealed a 12-mile-wide lake of liquid water 1 mile below Mars's south polar ice. Such radar reflects brightly where ice and water meet, a fact scientists have used to detect subglacial lakes on Earth. Here and on Mars, such lakes might stay liquid because dissolved salts and pressure from above lower water's freezing point. Arizona State University's Jim Bell, who works on NASA's Mars missions, says it's the strongest evidence for liquid water so far.
It's a really provocative result. if true. And so I think it really begs for additional data.
The findings appear in the journal Science. I'm Nicholas Gerbus in Phoenix.
And finally, from the business desk.
When Toys R Us closed all 735 stores across the country last month, many people blamed online competitors like Amazon. But former employees are pointing fingers at private equity firms and demanding severance pay. From the KJZZ Business Desk, Christina Estes introduces us to a former Phoenix store manager that has turned activist.
Tracy Auerbach's dining room table is covered in memories.
All kinds of fun things that we did in the store.
Huge black frames highlight dozens of photos.
There I am as a giraffe.
That used to hang in her office at the Babies R Us store in Ahwatukee. That's also where she displayed a shiny silver trophy.
Out of the 15 stores in Arizona, my Babies R Us store was the winner of this trophy, so I keep it near and dear to my heart.
After 30 years with Toys R Us, including 10 in Phoenix, Auerbach's final day was gut-wrenching.
Being in retail, you work lots and lots and lots of hours. So the people you work with really and truly become your family. Now you don't get to see your family every single day. We're still in touch, but it's different.
Tears fill her eyes, but Auerbach doesn't want pity. She wants money. Severance pay that Toys R Us has historically provided and promised them. When workers began worrying they might get nothing, Auerbach says she told them to give it time. The company would come through.
And then they made a fool out of me.
She got mad and got moving. With the help of two groups, Rise Up Retail and Center for Popular Democracy, Auerbach joined other former employees to lobby politicians in Washington, D.C. and to march into the lobbies of companies they hold responsible.
Never done anything like this in my life.
How did Auerbach and 33,000 other employees end up in this fight? It goes back to 2005, when private equity firms Bain Capital and KKR and Vornado Realty Trust used a leveraged buyout to purchase Toys R Us. A leveraged buyout includes a combination of equity and debt. The $6.6 billion sale included more than $5 billion in debt.
And the idea is that you pay down that debt over time, and thereby increasing the equity share, just like building home equity.
Laura Lindsay is a professor at ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business.
The question is whether or not you think sales are going to generate enough money to service the debt, pay the interest on the debt.
Toys R Us was on the hook for hundreds of millions in annual interest payments. Now toss in the Great Recession, a failed partnership with Amazon, and competition from Walmart and Target. During this time, Tracy Auerbach says employee benefits, positions, and hours were cut.
Less time to clean, to fix, to take care of, you know, things that maybe were falling apart or needed attention. There was no one there to do it.
Since the buyout, Bain, KKR, and Vornado have collected nearly $500 million in fees and interest payments. Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva and his colleagues in the Progressive Caucus sent a letter to the firms asking, among other things, exactly how did they earn those fees?
You know, these leveraged buyouts have to come with some rules. It can't just be a corporate raider goes in, like Bain, buys it, takes what it can from it, dumps debt on it, and then leaves.
But ASU's Laura Lindsay says private equity firms want to turn companies around because then they make more money. Many investors in private equity firms are public pensions, groups that cover retirements for teachers, police officers, and firefighters.
Let's be frank, these people are very well compensated. But they're also highly skilled, and they return money to their investors.
Okay, this is item 9B.
During last month's investment committee meeting of the California Public Employees Retirement System, former Toys R Us employees spoke out.
Make sure you're not investing in companies that are all about corporate greed instead of workers' needs.
In Minnesota, the state pension board has suspended new commitments to KKR while it reviews the firm's role in Toys R Us's downfall. People close to the situation but not authorized to speak on the record say severance pay discussions are underway between Toys R Us and former employees.
After 30 years of working for them, I got plenty of time to wait.
Back at Tracy Auerbach's home, she shows off Jeffrey money, named after the iconic Toys R Us giraffe.
It got so crazy, people would counterfeit it.
Today, Jeffrey money can't pay for anything, but it's still worth a lot to Auerbach, just like her employees.
They really are my family. And I need to take care of them.
Christina Estes, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation, Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation, the IEEE Foundation, the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, ASU Research, Beach Fleischmann, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian, and this is KJZZ, your news and information station.